Again, I get to speak to our patrons, our customers, who we get to educate about not only the food, but where the food is from. So I get to talk about my heritage. I get to talk about my culinary culture or my culture. I get to share with them all those beautiful things about the different islands of the Philippines, about the beaches, and you know, all the good things that I remember growing up and that I'm still learning now as an adult.
This is The Crackling. I'm Anthony Huckstep. One's culture, one's heritage is as important as exploring new boundaries. In Australia, we are blessed with a rich tapestry of cuisines and cultures from all over the world. As a child, Will Mahuse grew up helping his father deliver the colour and vibrancy of Filipino cuisine with his catering company. As an adult, he's taken the reins of the family business, found bricks and mortar, and is leading the charge to celebrate and take Filipino food to a wider audience down under. Will, was there a lot of pressure in carrying on your father's legacy and build upon that?
Yes, I did feel the pressure, and there are times where I still feel a bit of that pressure because obviously, you know, he's been doing it for well over 3 decades and I've only been doing it for a solid 5, maybe 6 years, not counting, you know, the 2 years of training, being his sort of sidekick. And the flavors is the exact flavor, aroma, everything. Yeah, it's sometimes the pressure sort of kicks in, or the expectations. But you know, I do have faith in what I've learned through him. So, but then also just to as a measuring stick, he does, you know, taste, bit of a taste tester for how I produce things, and you know, give me the 2 thumbs up, then I'm good.
You mentioned 2 years training, even though you grew up in that environment. What, tell us about that period of timing, what it took with the training.
Well, I do have to say that my dad processes his, you know, recipe, I suppose. He's guarded it very close to his heart, and he didn't even share that to any of my siblings. I'm the only one who has been passed. Yeah. It wasn't even until I was in my late 30s-ish, mid-late 30, that I was able to learn those things from him. And not because he was the one who took the initiative to show me. It was because of me. If I didn't ask, then he wouldn't have shown me or taught me. Yeah. And he's the only one, like, he kept it close to his, sort of guarded, like a you know, like in a vault, so to speak.
Well, the restaurant that you have, Sydney Cebu Lechon, is built around that dish. And tell us about how important that dish is to your heritage.
Well, first of all, I was born in a city called Cebu. Cebu City is the central part of the Philippines. The Philippines made up of well over 7,100 islands. Cebu is one of those. That's an iconic dish of that particular province or that particular island, Cebu Lechon. It's literally, the lechon is actually literally named after the island of Cebu. So it is important. It is iconic, and it's, you know, naming your dish as your restaurant, I don't know what to say, but it does bring pressure in terms of expectation, because when your restaurant is named after a particular dish, then you need to pretty much live up to what that dish, I suppose, is all about, if that makes sense.
Well, Anthony Bourdain was quoted as saying that dish is the best on the planet. in regards to roast pig. Can you tell us about the dish and how it's cooked?
Yeah, so Anthony Bourdain, when he made a statement, years back, the late Anthony Bourdain, that basically put the cibulichon dish, I suppose, on the map, and got to experience what cibulichon is all about. And the way it's prepared is it's a freshly back in the Philippines. It's the most common thing to do for a lot of the families is they would kill the slaughter the pig in the early hours of the morning, say around 5 a.m. And the preparation process, because it's all manual in terms of like literally manual. It's not like the abattoir that we have here. A lot of it could be automated. So you've got a group of men holding the pig down, and so all of the process, and I got to experience that when I was a child, and obviously I wasn't a fan of that. Yeah, it starts from that and cleaning the internal sections of the pig, and trying not to waste anything. So we would keep all the intestines and the liver, and you could make a lot of dishes out of those things. But more importantly, what the cibulichon is very iconic with its flavor and its aroma, very aromatic, and it's not your ordinary roast pork, put it that way. I love my roast pork, with mustard or applesauce, but the cibulichon is like your roast pork, but the upgraded version.
Well, what's some of the ingredients and techniques that make it so special?
It's not cibulichon unless it's cooked over charcoal or fire, or it doesn't matter what charcoal you use or what sort of just natural fire, not gas or electricity. To the aromatics, so each family will have different variations, or each we call it barrio. Barrio is, I suppose, in here we would call it sort of LGAs, or like city council sort of areas. So each sort of council areas or barrio, we would have different variations, but not too much difference. So I add star anise. The other family, the next suburb may not add star anise, for example, or they might add bay leaves instead. But for my family recipe, it's no longer a secret because I do share. But we add stuff like lemongrass, definitely, a lot of garlic, a lot of scallions, spring onions, a lot of bay leaves, black peppercorns, star anise, for example, salt. So those are the handful of things that must go in our cibulichon, in the Mahusay cibulichon. And cibulichon, it is somewhat has salty notes to it, and that salty notes is prominent sort of flavor profile when it comes to cibulichon. So you've got your salty flavor profile, you've got your aromatics in there, and then that's obviously cut down. All of that is sort of washed down with what we call a sawsawan. So the word sawsawan is essentially a condiment, the word condiment or a dipping sauce, and it's heavy on acidity, a lot of acidity, and the saltiness of that is balanced with soy sauce. And then you chop your tomatoes, your onions, for example, and some garlic, and you mix it all into that acidic condiment. You can let it ferment for days or months on end. But otherwise, you could just put together that mixture, and that's what you would. That's the number one dipping sauce or condiment that you would have with every cibulichon. We call it sawsawan.
One of the features of the Cebu Electron is the incredible glass-like sort of crackling and skin that you achieve, and also that color that also how do you what does it take to get crackling in the skin like that?
Well, first of all, you do need to dry out the skin. You need to draw the moisture out. Once that's all done, there's this technique that a lot of the Chinese barbecue place use, where they've got this tool where there's a lot of like pins, and you use that little tiny pin and create those micro holes. And whether you want to rub it with salt or not, it's up to you. Again, it's a different process for every family, but definitely dry out the skin. Do that process where you stab those micro holes in the skin. Different people will sort of coat it with different things, such as like I've tried coating our one with Coca-Cola. That gives it that because obviously the sugar in the Coca-Cola, it gives it that slight caramelization color and a bit of sweet, a tad bit of sweetness to it as well.
Tell us a bit about Filipino food and what food and feasts were like for you as a kid.
Filipino food is a feast. It's a definitely a communal. It's a communal way to eat. It's very seldom, or it's not common for Filipinos to eat. Filipino families to eat on their own. Growing up, we would always eat as a group, as a family, as a group, whether it's a group of friends. The only exception is if you're home alone. But for the most part, I could never, or we are never, we would never be allowed to eat on our own. We need to eat, or we have to eat with our siblings and with our parents, or if your grandparents are around. Filipino food is presented or put together, has that communal outcome. I suppose similar to Italian culture, the culinary culture of Italy, where it's quite communal sense, where it's you've got your table, long table, whether it's a long table or not, but there's a spread there that the nonna would put out, right? It's very communal, so it's very similar in terms of the way we gather around and feast and eat, and a lot of banana leaves, for example, in certain provinces are used as your plate, and eating with your hands, we call that kamayan. So kamayan is the act of eating with your hands. In this modern day and age, obviously. That may not be as popular as it was 30 or 50 years ago, with your spoon and fork being readily available now. But yeah, it is a fun experience. It's very community-like eating, and everything is made to share.
Is there any events or experiences that you recall when you were young that your parents put on with the catering company that you can tell us about?
Oh yes, of course. Growing up, my family threw quite a bit of parties, and we were also invited to parties. And it was those earlier years where that's how my dad's pig started. Because what started as a family gathering, he would bring it there. Other visitors or guests would say, "Oh, who did this? Oh, Fred Mahusay did it." And then, "Oh, can I order from you?" Friends of friends and friends of friends of friends are ordering it, and we, would get invited to those parties. Obviously, that we would be there because, we're still young, and we would be attached to them pretty much wherever they go. And I would see my dad's pig, my dad's cibulachon on their table as a centerpiece. It's somewhat a grand gesture, a sign of grand gesture. It is a centerpiece, and it's probably the dish that people would run to first because they want that piece of cibulachon before it disappears.
Tell us about your career for the the majority of it, it wasn't in food. But what led to that change and that desire to move into the food industry and take on the family business?
Yeah, so before the before getting into hospitality, I was working for companies such as Corporate Express, which is, I believe it's now known as Staples. I work for companies like Open Colleges as a, you know, as a career advisor. I've also worked for startup, tech startup companies like Groupon Australia, New Zealand. And I enjoyed working for the corporate, and I learned so much valuable transferable skills, such as marketing, such as building a business, such as scaling up a business, such as sales and marketing abilities and skills. And that's what I was able to learn for over 15 years. And I was able to apply a lot of those skills and the things that I've learned to take Fred and Feli Mahuse Sibulachon to now what it's called Sydney Sibulachon. And I renamed it Sydney Sibulachon because Sydney, although I was born in the Philippines, in Cebu, but I was, for the most part, raised in Sydney from the age of 10 or 11. Now, turning 46 this year. So, you know, I was brought up in Sydney. So it was only natural for me to call it Sydney, which is the city that I grew up in. And then I had to add Sibulachon there because that's obviously what we're representing. So hence the reason why it's now Sydney Sibulachon.
Tell us about that transition. What triggered it? And were there some surprises moving into hospitality for you?
There was. And I would say, for lack of a better term, critics in terms of how to manage or handle all sorts of criticism. For me, it was very new. And I didn't have sort of a textbook, or I didn't have a guideline on how I should deal with critics, because I, at the very beginning, I took things to heart. It sort of affected me personally. But after some time, after I'd say a couple of years, I then learned how to filter and how to separate that part of my personal life. And to where I am now, I would just say to myself that, look, I can't please everybody. That's just a fact. Like, I can't please everyone. The flavors that I produce may not be every single person's cup of tea. And now that I think about that, I've come to a realization, and I've acknowledged that, and I've accepted that, and I can live with that. Because, and it's the truth. It's not just a fact, but it's the truth. And I can't, yeah, you can't, I suppose, yeah, you can't please everyone out there. And everyone out there has different expectations on what a, you know, a steak should taste or what a sibulachon should taste. But I just focus on the majority. And I know this, that the majority of the people that I've served are very pleased and happy. But, you know, and there are a minority that are not happy because they expect it to be like this or to be like that. But for me, that's fine. Yeah.
Filipino cuisine is not as prevalent as other Southeast Asian cuisines in Australia. But you're really at the a driving force in sharing the knowledge of it and experiences. Why do you think it's not as prevalent, and what's so great about it, and why people should embrace it?
Well, first of all, I need to sort of put it out there that myself and there are other individuals or non-for-profit organizations that I've been a part of and still a part of now, where we all come together as a community and really, you know, make Filipino food part of daily conversation in, you know, the general mainstream Australia. So I've got my sister, Louisa Brimble, who was with me for the cook-up. And you've got the Entree Pinais. And in Sydney, we have FFMA. And Anna is inspiration to me. And So we're all a driving force behind each other's passion and motivation. And Kylie, Javier Ashton, she's an amazing woman. So, talking about Filipino food outside of the Filipino community, and we all do our part. I'm doing as much as humanly possible to make Filipino food be part of Aussie, discussion. Because the reason why, for me, the reason why it's underrepresented, perhaps even borderline underappreciated, is because Filipino food, and perhaps you could say this with a lot of cultures out there, but Filipino food is such a memory in a sense that we grow up eating Filipino food that's cooked by not only our grandparents, but our own parents. And you grow up eating that food in your household for decades. And then, some of us, and I've been guilty of it, I'll be one of the first people to admit I've been guilty of this, where I would go out and rather than appreciating what that chef or cook what served or cooked for me, I would say, oh, but it's not the way my mom cooks or the way my grandmother prepares it, so therefore it's not legit, if that makes any sense. But as soon as I stopped that mindset, as soon as I said to myself, Will, I can't, you can't keep on having that sort of expectations, because of course your mum's, your nonna's spaghetti is probably going to taste better than the other person's spaghetti. Just Filipino food, it tends to be like that, and we're our own worst critic. And that's where all of us are coming together to try and break that mentality, to try and break, certain mentalities that's been holding us back, is what we call the crab mentality, for example. So we're all coming together to re-educate ourselves and the people around us that, hey, go out to a Filipino restaurant or to a Filipino eatery, experience what they've got to, what they're serving you, and appreciate it for what it is.
You've got a short menu, but pork makes up a really big part of that. What's the reason behind that, and what's some of the other pork dishes that you do at Sydney Sibu
Yeah, so our menu is very short, as in we've got what, maybe eight dishes on our menu. Have two or three other dishes that we'll add on our chalkboard specials as part of our specials. But that sometimes changes, once a month, if that. But our regular menu has about eight items, and we are a pork specialist. So that's the reason why our menu is what, 70% pork dish. So our star dish, our signature sibulichon, essentially we would translate it to charcoal roast pork. The other pork dishes that we've got is our garlic pepper pork sausages, and our cured caramelized pork neck that's thinly sliced. It's pan fried. It has caramelization, a little bit on the sweet note side of it. And we've also got our twice cooked or deep fried crispy pork belly that has a liver pate dipping sauce, which we call, a lot of people call it Bang Tomas or Sarsa. And we also have our spicy coconut curry, where the main ingredient, again, it's crispy, deep fried crispy pork belly with a decadent thick coconut curry that's mixed in with our fermented shrimp paste and chili as well. And it's a slight, I would say it is spicy. And then other dishes are like your chicken hombat, which is the braised soy chicken served in a clay pot. And we have organic mixed vegetables. We saute in shrimp, fermented shrimp paste, for example.
What's so special about the pig for Filipino cuisine? It features so strongly on your menu, and Cebu lechon is obviously a very important dish culturally, but what is the significance of the pig and why is it so important?
Well, it is pork, beef, for example. Those are the two sort of meat or protein that's not easily purchased by many people. And if you're going to put together a party in, let's say, in the Philippines, and you have a gathering in your barrio or in your sort of suburb or neighborhood, and you have like pork dishes or beef dishes, that's quite considered as a extravagant sort of dish. So it's not an everyday protein, and something everyday that the general public would put up is like something like fish, because fish is a very affordable. An all vegetarian or vegan dish, of course. But yeah, and chicken is also another one that's also somewhat affordable. But when you're talking about pork or beef, like, especially pork, it is a special, almost like a special occasion type of protein that you would serve. And so in here, the way I've designed the menu is a couple of things. One, let's make it a celebration by putting this type of meat on our menu, by making it more predominantly pork, because one or a few things, pork is very famous in the Philippines. Two, because of its meaning, where let's not wait for a reason to eat pork. Let's just make it everyday a celebration. Let's not create an occasion. Let every day be an occasion, so to speak. And then three, because if you're going to be buying a whole pork or a whole hog pig, then you kind of want to use ev as much as you can of that pig. And with our pig, we dissect the belly section, and we make a lot of it our dish, such as the lechon kawale, or the crispy Bicol Express, or the cibu lechon belly roll, for example.
Now that you've been running a hospitality business for 5 or 6 years and celebrating Filipino cuisine, what is it that you love about what you do?
In no particular sort of order, one, I get to not only serve the food that my dad taught me, that he's passed on to me, and now he's the grandmaster, and I would say, comfortably speaking, I would say I'm the master. I've yet to achieve his sort of level yet. And then again, I get to speak to our patrons, our customers, communities that are outside of the Filipino communities, non-Filipino individuals, who we get to educate about not only the food, but where the food is from. So I get to talk about my heritage. I get to talk about my culinary culture or my culture. I get to share with them all those beautiful things about the different islands in the Philippines, about the beaches, and all the good things that I remember growing up, and that I'm still learning now as an adult. Three, what I love about, or what I enjoy and love about what I'm doing, is that I get to basically pass on what my dad has taught me to my team.
Well, Will, you're an inspiration, and we've loved having you on the Crackling today to hear your story. Good luck with everything, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you so much.
This is The Crackling, a Deep in the Weeds production in partnership with Porkstars. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we catch up with some of Australia's best chefs and pork producers to discover what makes Australian pork so special.